We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m. And if you missed us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
Make sure you're following us on all social media because we out here.
Yes.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram,
yes.
House Party,
yes.
YouTube,
there.
Twitch, Black Planet. I know y'all talking about our OnlyFans. It's going crazy in there. MySpace, Tinder, catch us ticking on the TikTok and Google+.
In this episode, we'll be putting you up on Kamala Harris not saluting military escort and New Jersey's Fresh Out program.
Baltimore will no longer prosecute drug possession, prostitution, and other low-level offenses. And New York City is the first city in the country to make some serious adjustments to qualified immunity.
But first, let's jump into, was it a bird, a plane, something strange for a little bit of change?
Hey.
If you live in the Pacific Northwest, you may have seen a strange meteor streaking across the sky Thursday night, but that was no chunk of asteroid or comet. It was likely SpaceX debris falling and burning up in Earth's atmosphere, experts say. Some people on the social medias have excitedly shared videos and photos of the event, referring to the fallen debris as a possible meteor shower, shooting star, or comet. Some have even cited extraterrestrial activity as the cause, though no experts have validated that possibility. On March 4th, SpaceX launched a batch of 60 Starlink internet satellites to orbit abroad a two-stage Falcon 9 rocket. Experts think the re-entering upper stage of that rocket is what caused last night's sky show, which speckled the sky with bright glowing dots that moved across the sky. Local reports pegged the event at just after 9 p.m. Thursday on the U.S. West Coast. It was unofficially reported that the widely reported bright objects in the sky were the debris from a Falcon 9 rocket second stage that did not successfully have a deorbit burn. The National Weather Service, Seattle, tweeted. They added in a follow-up tweet that there are no expected impacts on the ground or in our region at this time. Jonathan McDowell, an astronomer and satellite tracker at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, shared that the bright spots seen are fallen SpaceX debris. The Falcon 9 second stage from the March 4th Starlink launch failed to make a deorbit burn and is now re-entering after 22 days in orbit, McDowell tweeted. A deorbit burn happens when a spacecraft fires its thrusters to slow down and start descending toward annihilation in Earth's atmosphere. The goal of such burns is to get rid of a piece of space hardware quickly when its job is done, to keep it from becoming orbital debris.
I mean, I hear all of this, bruh. Like, I seen it pop up on social media. All I hear them saying is that they hating on alien conspiracy. That's what, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, yeah, debris. What's in the debris, fam?
Talk to us.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I saw some of the pics when they were popping up, and I feel like I missed out on something. I seen two posts in a row about it.
Right.
And I walked outside like I was going to see it, too.
Like, they lying. It ain't out here.
I was trying to check it out. Yeah. As somebody, I feel like I often see shooting stars. Almost any clear night I look up, been that way since I was young. And it's always a thing when I see one and try to tell somebody. Nobody right. ever looks to where you're looking, and there's no way to like have somebody see what you're seeing
right.
when it comes to the sky, no matter right. what you're doing. Never happens. And I always feel dumb after doing it. Like, why did I even bother? I just kept that to myself.
God bless your West Coast upbringing. Seeing shooting stars.
Yes.
You see stars shooting. You know, on the East Coast. You don't usually see those shooting stars.
Though. Right.
So, like, when I saw it on social media, I was like, yo, that's crazy. Wow. And like, it had to be super bright because all of the video and images were crystal clear.
Right. Right. There was no CCTV style footage.
Yeah.
It was all 1080p and above.
4K, HK. All the Ks.
Y'all love it.
Oh, man. In other good news, speaking of the East Coast, Baltimore will no longer prosecute lower level offenses. Say what? Pardon me? On Friday, Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby says the city will no longer prosecute for prostitution, drug possession, and other low-level offenses. The announcement comes at the end of her office's one-year experiment in not prosecuting minor offenses to decrease the spread of COVID-19. Mosby said in an official press release, "Today's war on drug users is over in the city of Baltimore. We leave behind the era of tough-on-crime prosecution and zero-tolerance policing and no longer default to the status quo to criminalize mostly people of color for addiction." The experiment known as the COVID criminal justice policies is an approach to crime developed with public health authorities. Instead of prosecuting people arrested for minor crimes like prostitution and public urination, the program dealt with those crimes as public health issues and worked with community partners to help find solutions. According to the press release, the program has led to a decrease in the overall incarcerated Baltimore population by 18%. While violent and property crimes are down by 20% and 36%, respectively. The following offenses will no longer be prosecuted: drug and drug paraphernalia possession, prostitution, trespassing, minor traffic offense, open container violations, and urinating and defecating in public. Mosby says she intends to refocus law enforcement on more severe offenses that plague the city and have contributed to its violent reputation. She says, "When the courts open next month, I want my prosecutors working with the police and focused on violent offenses like armed robbery, carjacking cases, and drug distribution organizations that are the underbelly of the violence in Baltimore, not using valuable jury trial time on those that suffer from addiction." Her decision was supported by Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott and Baltimore City Police Commissioner Michael Harrison, but Republican State Senator Robert Casely said that while he supports prosecutorial judgment, Mosby's decision is closer to making the law rather than enforcing it. He's quoted as saying, "Prosecutors take an oath to uphold the Constitution in the state of Maryland, and the Constitution says the General Assembly sets the policy, not the prosecutors. I respect the whole prosecutorial discretion. That's not prosecutorial discretion. That's an exercise in legislating. That's what the legislator is supposed to do." Mosby said the state's attorney's office is working with the Baltimore Police Department and Baltimore Crisis Response, Inc., a crisis center dealing with mental health and substance abuse issues, to offer services instead of arresting individuals committing these lesser offenses. Rather than arrest and prosecution, BCRI will connect individuals with services in areas such as mental health, housing, and substance abuse, according to the press release. Mosby's office, along with the Baltimore Police and BCRI, will work to support sex workers by partnering with local organizations like SPARC, a center for women in Southwest Baltimore, Baltimore Safe Haven, and the Baltimore's branch of Sex Workers Outreach Project.
Yeah. I like that we're seeing more community services being instituted as where these low-level offenses are being turned to rather than lock them up.
Right.
It makes way more sense. And like urinating in public, going to jail for that?
Come on, man.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
So this, you know, of course, I'm all in support.
Absolutely. And I don't mean to sound like, sound so worrisome, but I'm waiting for the other foot to drop. Like, we saw what happened. Like, Trump was the response to Obama. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Trump losing and Kamala and Biden winning, what we have in Georgia is a response to that. You know what I'm saying? But them changing the voting laws. Like, so as we're starting to see all these different progressive changes happening, the Republicans are going to find really, really creative and just destructive ways to either reverse or, you know, just cause all types of havoc. The ramifications of prosecuting less people of color affects the prison industrial complex. That's less money. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a trickle down effect,
right,
of decriminalizing a lot of this stuff. And that's what, you know, that's where the financial support comes from. So, like, you know, somebody's going to be upset about this. A lot of bodies are going to be upset about this.
You just unpacked that in a very great way.
This is what we do. We run up the numbers, B. We can end it now. End it now. End it now. Do all the drums.
All of that. We got, you know, the other side definitely in an uproar about this next story.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
VP Kamala Harris not saluting military escorts. A video viewed more than 900,000 times on Twitter was shared widely by conservative social media accounts in an attempt to paint the vice president as unpatriotic and disrespectful to service members. Disgraceful. At VP Kamala Harris refuses to salute the honor guard at the steps of the aircraft. It is a clear demonstration of her dislike for those in uniform, both law enforcement and military, tweeted Bernard Carrick, former New York City police commissioner. While Harris did not salute the troops, she is not required to. Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby said in a statement that there is no instruction or regulation requiring the president or the vice president to return a hand salute to members of the armed forces. Vice President Harris has made very clear her respect and admiration for the men and women of the military as well as their families, Kirby said. According to Army regulation, the president, as the commander-in-chief, is required to receive a salute, but there is no requirement that the vice president receive a salute. Some are trying to suggest the vice president lacks respect for our military. This could not be further from the truth, Sabrina Singh said, deputy press secretary to the vice president, said in a statement. In addition, Harris has no responsibility to salute the troops. She has no authority over them according to the Constitution. Richard Waterman, University of Kentucky presidential historian, said in an email, her constitutional function is to serve as president of the Senate. Saluting the troops would be an act of courtesy, but this is another example of politics as usual in Washington. It's not the first time a member of the White House has been criticized over saluting service members. Former President Barack Obama made headlines not once, but twice while in office. In 2013, Obama walked by a service member as he boarded Marine One without a salute, returning a few moments later to shake the guard's hand. A year later, he again made headlines when he saluted troops with a coffee cup in his hand as he departed Marine One. Before Obama, critics were also not happy with former President George W. Bush holding his dog, Barney, as he attempted to salute in 2001. According to historians, Ronald Reagan was the first president to regularly salute troops. This is, you know, just the idea of how many people, you know, find exception with things that we're not thinking about, you know, and, you know, take this out of even politics, just in general, of how many actions on our day to day are not thoughts that really are crossing our mind as far as a gesture or lack of a gesture. You know how many times a head nod is given and not returned?
Right.
You know, and right. It's just, it's crazy to me how people try to always, when it comes to politics, especially on one side of it, it's always a disrespect to
the institution.
Yes.
The history, the Constitution, the flag. It's never about them disrespecting people, though.
Never.
Never.
No, it's the entire embodiment.
Yeah, the ideas. The ideas and principles. It's never about the people, though.
And with that, you know, we can pull back to, you know, people's outrage at not singing our great old nation song. And how many people actually at these games don't get up and do the thing. But the same people are outraged. You know, it just, it's the contradiction in speaking and it blows my mind at many times. Like, you have the energy to be upset like that and
right.
take the time to really be PO'd.
Right.
Your day That's is really thrown off.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, I definitely saw this coming only because we know that the current administration, and we knew this as they were coming into office, weren't going to be anywhere near as quote unquote exciting and inflammatory as Donald Trump's administration. Every single day of the week, he was insulting somebody, either foreign or domestically. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You're talking about disrespecting the military and disrespecting branches of government. That's all he did, was sow distrust, whether it was the FBI, like no matter who it was. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, okay, this is what we're going to complain about? Like,
right.
I'm glad, you know, you mentioned Obama in the story, because I remember them making a big deal about him wearing a tan suit.
Yes. Like,
if these are the days that we're returning to, cool. Give me more of that.
Yeah.
That's what y'all want to complain about? Fine. Cool. Great.
That is a straight up.
Yeah.
And the people that would cape in these moments of that ultimate disrespect, the amount of capes that would come out, star-spangled capes, in defense of whatever it was. No, he wasn't saying what he meant. No, he said, we heard,
right.
We read. What are you talking about?
They're quick to translate for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really, really are. I think, you know, we just have an opportunity here, especially after having to deal with so much every single week from Donald Trump's administration. We have an opportunity here to just not react to criticism coming from the right. Mm-hmm. Not play into their hands, because we know that they don't really care about any of this stuff at all. So we have to stop reacting to what we know they're pretending about.
Right.
We know you don't really care. We know you don't. So let's not react to it.
Right.
Oh, she didn't. Really? That's what's up. When these stimmies coming, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're not engaging in these nut conversations with y'all. Y'all out here tripping. So wild, man. It's crazy. But yeah, man, we got some interesting things still developing on the East Coast. New York City limits qualified immunity, making it easier to sue police for misconduct. Now, you and I were together last week on Friday when this news hit. And I remember looking at you like, wait a minute. In this dimension? In New York?
Yes.
Bruh. What was your immediate reaction?
My immediate was the New York, not like New York, Minneapolis, like not like Minnesota. Like, it's, this is the New York.
Right. New York, North Dakota.
Yeah. Like, so I had to, like, once I let that kind of process through as I was continuing to work, it was hitting me like, that is the, when you think of a police force, a New York officer is what pops in my head, even though I am from the West Coast.
Yeah.
I would paint the picture, if they asked me to describe, it would be that.
New York
and
cop.
To know what we've seen and heard over the years of the recklessness coming from there, this is something wild. Again, it didn't start in a small town. This didn't start in somewhere that really didn't matter. For this to happen there?
Bruh, all I know is Law and Order, SVU, and all the other different chapters is about to be cracking. It's about to go down. New York City Council on Thursday voted to limit qualified immunity, which became a focal point of the debate to reform policing across America last summer. This legislation aimed at making it easier to sue police officers for misconduct. The newly passed legislation allows victims of alleged police misconduct in New York City to bypass qualified immunity standards needed to bring a case. Qualified immunity is a decades-old legal doctrine that's often shielded police officers in cases of excessive force or unreasonable search and seizure. Sam Feldman, a New York City public defender, told CBS News, "I have clients who have definitely suffered unlawful arrests, unlawful searches, and excessive force. I would say it's not common for those people to sue about that, even when it's happened to them, because it's so difficult to win those cases." Qualified immunity was originally created by the Supreme Court in 1967 to provide a good faith defense for government officials if they believe their conduct was legal. But opponents of the doctrine say it's since been co-opted. The rule now requires a victim to show their clearly established constitutional or statutory rights were violated. This means finding an existing court decision that ruled the specific action in question as unconstitutional, which opponents say can be difficult, if not impossible in some cases. New York City Council Speaker Corey Johnson took to Twitter saying, "Qualified immunity has been used to deny justice to victims of police abuse for decades. It should never have been allowed, but I'm proud that we took action today to end it here in New York City." In New York City's case, lawmakers have created a law at the local level that pertains solely to the conduct of city police. Plaintiffs could still be blocked by qualified immunity if they sue under federal law, which Feldman said is likely to prompt more suits in city courts. The measure only eliminates qualified immunity for police and does not extend to other government workers, such as corrections officers or officials from child services. Mayor Bill de Blasio said he supports the bill and that a lot of work went into aligning it with the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act, which House Democrats approved earlier this month. That measure would also limit qualified immunity. In a statement Thursday, de Blasio said, "These reforms will confront centuries of overpolicing in communities of color and strengthen the bonds between police and community. Together, we'll make our city safer and fairer for generations to come." The resolution is part of a broader package of police reforms, including providing the Civilian Complaint Review Board, which investigates misconduct, the resources to focus on racial bias in policing. The city council also approved the mayor's $72 million plan to improve police accountability and transparency. Critics of reforming qualified immunity say the doctrine gives officers the discretion to make split-second decisions when their lives could be at risk. Those critics believe reform will hurt the recruitment and retention of qualified officers. Paul Giacomo, the president of the Detectives Endowment Association, a union that represents thousands of NYPD officers, said, "Every bill they put in is making it more difficult for our detectives and the police in the street to do their job." According to a report from the Marshall Project in 538, New York City spends roughly $170 million each year on police misconduct settlements. That's because the city often bears the responsibility to pay damages for the alleged misconduct of police officers. The city's newly passed bill doesn't mandate specific disciplinary actions for officers who commit misconduct. Criminal justice advocates consider limiting qualified immunity a step forward, but are still fighting for progress towards long-lasting reform. Susan Kang, an associate professor of political science at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, says, "If a doctor gets sued, they don't have to pay out of pocket, but they may no longer be able to afford their malpractice insurance. That's a really strong incentive for them to be extremely cautious in their practice of medicine. But this bill doesn't have that sort of individual disciplinary component to it." And I think that part is what's missing. Mm-hmm. Like, I've heard Dick Gregory mention the concept of having the police have to carry insurance. Mm. And it was like, you know, every time they fire their firearm or get into a situation, you know, their insurance takes a hit. The same way we do for, you know, getting tickets.
Yeah.
And he was like, when you create a situation where it makes it a little bit more difficult for them to feed their family if they're being irresponsible, then he was like, then that's going to change everything. You know what I'm saying? Like, and he was speaking specifically about, like, the racial structure of policing. And he was like, tax them for being racist, tax them for their biases. And I was like, oh, I like that.
Yeah. I like that. I mean, because like that's my first time hearing about that.
Mm.
And just processing that quickly on the fly is, yes, there's a reason why, like, use our car insurance, for instance.
Right.
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 Why we pay attention a bit more. Especially if those numbers, you know, you get a ticket or two, you know, that insurance is about to go nuts.
Yep.
And, you know, another one, and then you're going to be SR22 in it.
Bruh.
Those are things that keep you
in line,
calming down.
Yep.
It doesn't end, you know, the traffic violations, but it makes you think, you know, I know I've gotten my last ticket. I know I get to 10 miles per hour under the speed limit. Bruh. As soon as I see those traffic lights with the flasher on it. I don't even play around in the ballpark of what the mileage per hour is posted as.
Yeah.
That is, yeah.
Yeah, that's huge. And I mean, that type of oversight and just level of responsibility is really, really necessary in a job where you have the ability to take someone's life. You know what I'm saying? I don't understand. I mean, of course we understand, you know, the purpose of it and the racial motivations behind it. And honestly, I don't believe anyone can have a good faith argument as to why police shouldn't be held more accountable. You know what I'm saying? There's no good faith argument against getting rid of qualified immunity. You just want police to be able to continue to do whatever they want unchecked. This whole, you know, idea of it's going to make it harder to hire police. You mean it's going to make it harder to hire people that don't want to be held accountable? Then they shouldn't be police.
That is the simplest way to lay that out.
Yeah, like, okay, cool. We don't want people that just want to be out here wilding like cowboys. We don't want them to be police department. We don't want them to be, you know, in the police department. We want to get rid of the police department in the in its current structure anyway. But if we're going to move forward continuing this thing, yeah, y'all need to change your hiring practices, evaluations, getting rid of qualified immunity. Yeah, all the things need to happen for real. Like, seriously, they are tripping.
We're going to get to some lightness. Libraries, of course, is key tools for people getting out of prison. And the Fresh Start program addresses this.
All right.
A New Jersey public libraries program called Fresh Start provides help to the formerly incarcerated. Everything from training and how to make a FaceTime call to compiling resources for job fairs and food banks. Fresh Start is trying to get the word out. The program has shiny new turquoise billboards hung at train stations, as well as ads on buses with a 1-800 number in bold white letters. John D. Harrell, program manager of Fresh Start, says reentering society is far more complicated than many realize. People coming home need help. He knows firsthand. In addition to providing computer training, tech support, and job readiness training, he says, the program also has social workers. A critical part of what Fresh Start does is working with the newly released to help them rebuild relationships when they come home. COVID-19 is causing prisons to send people home early. Last year, between March and just a few months later, more than 100,000 people returned home from prison. That's 3.5 times more than the year before. At the same time, many libraries have had to sharply limit and close their physical locations, and that means those who help with prison reentry are having to get creative. Fresh Start has had to go virtual, but that's butted the program against the problems that many of its clients face: a lack of tech savviness and access.
Right.
As a result, some social workers have tried meeting in public parks and other spaces outdoors, but that can cause another problem. Nicole Warren, a social worker with Fresh Start, says her meetings with her clients are meant to be confidential, like at the doctor's. Clients are worried they'll be overheard. In some cases, friends, neighbors don't know that the person is even away in prison, Warren says. So the family has kind of told a story that they were away at college or away working. And there's some shame and embarrassment, even for the incarcerated person, that that is where they've been. But Warren says the biggest problem of all has been getting the word out, letting those recently released from prison know that even if access to a library's physical location is limited, they can still get help from the library. Last year, she says, clients would often just drop by, maybe 5 on a good day. Now she says it's more like 5 a week. Harrell says for now, he and the program's therapist are doing most of the counseling over the phone. He's looking forward to the day when New Jersey's libraries can fully reopen. In prison, he says, anyone who wants to gain knowledge or try to change their life eventually finds their way to the library.
This is dope.
This is awesome. I was having a conversation based on a meme that was shared from I want to say it was a parole or a probation officer. It had to been a parole officer, of a man who was released after doing close to 20 years. And when he came home, a bunch of things were like, send an email, download this form in PDF, or download this PDF, fill out this form, email it to so-and-so, send a copy of fax of whatever. And he had no idea of what was going on. When he left, this was not a way that communications happened. Now this is the leading way that communications happen, and a lot of times that gets overlooked. I was just speaking this morning about how there's people who have never left society and barely can figure out how to attach a file to an email.
Facts.
you know, there's people who are not up on what's happening. So you have people that have been removed and then thrown back into society and just expected to pick up the pace.
Right.
And get right back on board, and how troubling that is, especially in this computer age. Like, our lives are filled in every avenue with digital exchanges. Mm. And if you're not prepping people for that or having services, and I think for myself beforehand, right, leading up into release, these are things that should be a part of that track.
Right.
3 months before going up to the parole board, 6 months before going up to the parole board, that being a process.
Right.
Because again, we take this stuff for granted because it's so easy for us because we have been inundated and this is, we're acclimated. This is what we do. This is a part of our lifestyle. But there are many people who don't get it and then get penalized for not getting it.
Because that's missing the point, out, right? That's the point. Exactly. Like, how can this be about rehabilitation if you're not prepping people to reintegrate in society? You want them to trip up to get right back in.
Right, right. So seeing this, you know, coming across this and this idea, it just was interesting because of the conversation that I was having before coming across this Fresh Start program. And, you know, I'm sure there's iterations of this in other places, but I would love to see this amplified and pushed in all cities, all places that a library is at.
Definitely. When I was in Philadelphia, I want to say this might have been around 2012, 2013, actually around 2011, I was working with an organization that focused on formerly incarcerated fathers and helping them reintegrate. So I'm working with brothers, teaching them, you know, computer basics and you know, how to fill out forms and things of that nature. And I remember in one of the classes, the brother was like, you know, you got to watch what you're doing on the internet because, you know, people are going to be tracking you and, you know, you can't just be putting your information everywhere.
Right.
You know, it led down a little pathway. It didn't go down a full rabbit hole, but it led down a little pathway to conspiracy theories. And so I said to him, I said, you know, no disrespect, but we got to look at where we are in society. And then do you think that right now you have so many assets that people will break so many federal laws to get access to your bank account? One.
Yeah.
Two. When you went in, did you have a pager? Brother said, yeah. I said, okay, so your location has always been available. And if you have a cell phone today, no one needs to track you because in order for your phone to ring, your location needs to be available.
Yes.
So like, just, I can understand, you know, people coming back in society and this whole situation just being scary and a lot to try to, you know, navigate. But just something as simple as, like you said, being able to communicate with all the different services that you're supposed to be in lock and step with when you come out, send a fax here, make sure you email this person, you have to call this person. And it's like, wait a minute.
Right.
What's an email? How do I get an email to send an email? Like, what am I using to send an email? How do I use a computer? Like, these are real things that we just, like you said, we don't think about it. And there are so many of us that haven't, you know, been away from society and still can't navigate these steps.
And I know, you know, people's stance is like, you know, you have to advocate for yourself and so on. But that shame that comes with not being able to keep up and feeling like you're asking essentially a dumb question.
Right.
there's many of us in our regular lives who stay silent and just hope we can figure it out fumbling through instead of asking the dumb question.
Yeah. And then on top of that, there are things that we are experiencing together as a society that we're still just not comfortable having conversations around.
Right.
Dealing with technology, period. Where we all are on the spectrum and how it's affecting us. So I know, like, me and you cut from the same cloth as far as wearing so many different hats and training ourselves and watching different YouTube videos and working with different programs till we figure it out. Like, so our relationship with technology and just like studying is completely different. Like, we're the ones that when someone needed to set the VCR, they were calling us. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I saw a tweet from Chance the Rapper on his Instagram yesterday. And this is simple. It's so clear and concise, right?
Okay.
He says, I have chronic anxiety about answering the phone. Bruh.
Sir?
Bruh.
Sir.
I have chronic anxiety about answering the phone. This is someone that literally can pay anyone to answer phones for him. Mm-hmm. And he's communicating something as simple as that. And I never heard anyone else like say it.
Yeah.
But there are definitely times when either making a call or receiving a call, there can be a level of anxiety based on what face or voice we need to put on.
Yeah.
To prepare for that communication.
Yes.
And it's so crazy because I'm looking through the his comments. Mm-hmm. And SZA was like, look at all the blue checks. SZA was like, same. Chica was like, same. Mm-hmm. Rodney Jerkins was like, I know. That was a shot. Like, you ain't answering no calls.
Right.
But like, people are like, it's common. You know what I'm saying?
Very.
So imagine having expectations of someone who's never engaged with the technology.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild, man.
It's a lot. It can be overload.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially when it's not laid out, a clear path laid out, and you're trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw one meme. It was like, my phone is not for conversation. It's not for my phone is not for talking to people. That's not what my phone is for.
The way I felt that, and I'm just saying this before we get up out of here.
Say it, man.
How many times that I look, if a phone number is not stored in my phone, if there's not a name that's attached, I'll watch that thing ring through. And if you don't leave a message for me to figure it out, then you're never going to hear from me.
What are we talking about?
Yeah. On top of that, I think there's also this element of our digital communications being kind of a track record of the conversation.
Yep.
So depending on who I'm communicating with, I don't want to have the phone call to have any misinterpretation, any of that.
Yes.
I want this kind of done in a way that we can refer back to what was said.
Isn't that something?
It's so nuts.
In some cases, it's like, well, we need to have a face-to-face because I feel like emotions are getting lost in the text message. In mm-hmm. other cases, it's like, I need this text message as a record mm-hmm. of our conversation. Like, there's a lot going on.
Think about how, like, I know I feel lightweight disrespectful. I'm texting, and in mid-text conversation, the person just calls. What are you doing? There's a formality, formality to this. Like, I feel like at this point, you should see if somebody can take a call. There are certain people on my list that can definitely ring through and I know, okay, I need to answer this. This is important.
Right.
But most times it's, you didn't let me know why you were calling. I'm suspicious.
Bruh, if me and you are texting and you call me, now you've delayed the text. And I don't mean like I can't text you because you're calling. I mean, I'm putting my phone down.
Look.
You've decided to change the way we're engaging in this conversation. I'm cool. I'm going to go make a sandwich.
Look.
And then, you know, I don't know, practice doing kickstands. And then I come back and see, all right, what was he talking about?
Because
you're tripping. Yo, it's literally like, I know you had a Nextel. It's like people just chirping through and talking. Are you crazy?
Look.
What are you doing?
Look.
Yo, no.
No.
No. No. No. You trying to get blocked? What's wrong with you?
Look. Yes.
Listen,
shout out to
I know
the Fresh Start program.
I know y'all feeling this. Y'all going to hear this and be like, oh. I know you're lacking the nerve. It ain't just me and Cam. I know it. And you on my answer list. That's the thing. So I know we listen.
Exacto mundo.
But you laid it out. You called me from a number that I don't have and didn't leave a message. You don't want to talk to me.
No, it wasn't that important.
Even the scammers leave a message. Like, you know.
Look, or you'll text, you'll follow up with the text like, hey, this is so-and-so, hit me at.
Yeah, I don't even text people. Like, if they call from an unfamiliar number, it don't got to say scam likely. But if they call from an unfamiliar number and don't leave a message, I'm not texting you no more. Like, we've all,
and even with that,
been doing this for too long.
I pop down. I still, even if you leave a message, I'm going to still pop down and read the
bruh. Read the text. I'm going to read it before I listen through
the transcript and be like, it's worth it.
We're giving out gems right now. So anyone that, you know, has our number, and sometimes y'all don't get callbacks and y'all wonder what's happening, we just dry snitched on ourselves. Hey man, you know, I hope y'all have
a busy man.
We're busy man. There's a lot going on.
We like streamlined processes, people.
That having been said, make sure you check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 8 p.m. as we sit down and run up the numbers.
Run up the numbers.
Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron needs to resign.
Hosted by Cam Jones and DJ Ambush.
Brett Hankinson needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Special thanks to our researcher and writer, Claudia Claudio.
Hey. Miles Cosgrove needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Music by Seeds.
Jonathan Mattingly also needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Hey.